Hello and welcome to our IRSPT, Insulin Resistance Solution Practitioner Training call. This is a Q&A and coaching call and a place where you can come and bring your cases, your questions about the content, your questions about your clients, your questions about getting this information out into your community and the presentation that we've provided you, and absolutely anything at all that you're interested in learning about or asking me about to enhance your experience with the program. I'm excited to be here. These are my favorite types of calls because I really love just getting in touch with you and helping you and seeing where you're at with all this work. You do amazing work in this world. The work that you do is life-changing. It's transformational. And I love the fact that you're here and that you're sharing this. So the way that these calls work is there's no curriculum. You've got plenty of curriculum in your membership site. And the way that the curriculum works within the membership site is we've been sending you emails to kind of guide you through the work. You can go as fast or as slow as you want, actually, but we're just kind of giving you a kind of recommended pace. So what I'd like to do is if you have any questions, any cases you'd like to talk about, any blood sugar recordings or responses from people that you'd like to share and get some insights on, this is the place to do it. So a star 2 on your telephone keypad will raise your hand. I will see your hand up, and then I will open up your line, and you will have the floor, and we'll get to chat. We also have the ability, if you cannot make a call, we usually have the ability to okay, I'm starting another chat in the background just in case. You have the ability, if you can't make a call, to submit a question in advance, and several people have. So since no one is raising their hand right now, I'm going to go ahead and start with the questions that had been submitted in advance. One is from Britt in Hong Kong. She said she has a new client showing signs of both leaky gut and insulin resistance. However, if I put them on your insulin resistance protocol, then aren't they going to run the risk of, one, not absorbing the fiber nutrients properly, leaving them at the risk of parasite invasion? Raw organic vegetables in Asia run a high risk of parasites. Stomach issues may become worse with abundant raw seeds, nuts, veggies, if the gut is permeable. Actually, none of the above. If I start to heal his gut issues prior to starting insulin resistance, do you have recommendations on how to do this when the client is vegan, athlete, and not willing to drink bone broths? I wouldn't either. That's what she said, but I wouldn't either. Do seaweed broths work as well as animal version? Okay, so first of all, Britt, there's a lot of ways to skin a cat. There's a lot of ways to heal a leaky gut. And bone broth is one of them that's gotten popularity recently. I personally am not a big fan of it. I mean, I don't mind if somebody wants to drink a little bit of it, but bone is where lead stores in the body, and most animals are exposed to lead, and so you can run the risk of high accumulation of lead. There were studies that were done that compared people drinking a bone broth versus a chicken broth that was done, you know, just like with the meat, and then just water kind of thing. And the people who had the bone broth had the very high levels of lead accumulation. So I'm not a big fan of bone broth, and I've healed many a leaky gut in my 25 years without bone broth. Okay, so there's a lot of things. There's a lot of nutrients, and this is not a gut program. We do have a gut healing program, which we will be introducing later in the year. And that will take you through leaky gut repair. Now, you're bringing up some points. Somebody doesn't have to do a raw foods diet to be able to get their insulin levels under control. So maybe you're misconstruing. A lot of the recipes in my book are raw with the option of lightly steaming. They are all plant-based so that we can reach the majority of people. You can always add meat to a dish that's vegetable-based. It's really hard to figure out how to take the meat out when it's not vegetable-based. So most of the books and the recipe guides out there on insulin resistance are all animal-based, and it's really hard to figure out how you're going to make these without it, especially for the average person. So number one, many people with gut problems do fine on raw fruits and vegetables, absolutely no problem. It depends on the person. It depends on how ripped up their gut is. And we generally recommend a lot of blended foods when people are healing their gut, which is totally fine with insulin resistance. So my feeling is you can do both at the same time. However, if you're going to do them in order, you do want to start with the gut. Okay, so you're going to start with healing their gut. You got to start with the top down. You got to get them, you know, breathing, appreciating, chewing, having good stomach acid, having good relaxation techniques after they eat so their food doesn't sit and rot in their stomach. So there's a whole bunch of stuff, and it's totally consistent because my gut healing protocols, there's very similar recipes to what's in the insulin resistance. So it's all good. So I don't see any issues. Very good. Seaweed broths work well, yeah, but you can't base a gut healing program on bone broth. It's just it's one component. It's one optional component, and there's a lot of other things that need to be done, which is beyond the scope of this course. But I would say go ahead and do whatever you know to help them heal their leaky gut, but you give them this low glycemic diet. The diet that we're talking about for the insulin resistance program and balancing is a diet that's going to help them very naturally heal gut organisms, and especially candida and other kinds of funguses, which grow on sugar. They love sugar. So what better way to do it? You can hit both at the same time. You can incorporate some gut healing protocols in with getting them to balance their blood sugar. Everybody needs rest. Everybody needs stress management. Everybody needs sleep, right? The timing helps with the gut as well, because there's something called the migrating motor complex in the gut that requires that there be like at minimum 3.5 to 4 hours between meals in order to really fully activate that and keep things moving through, so people don't end up with things like SIBO and overgrowths and small intestinal inflammation. So it all works well together. Yeah, thank you. Luz in Delhi. Oh, wow. We're international, Hong Kong and Delhi. What would be the cause of glucose levels rising high after walking or exercising? For how long do we have access to the program? Am I going in a slow pace? Okay. So first of all, how long you have access to the program? Pretty much indefinitely. We say a year that you'll have access to the materials, but indefinitely, really, because we never take it away from you. We don't have that in plan. We say a year just in case we change our mind and don't want to offer the program anymore. But it's there. You'll have it indefinitely. You're going a slow pace. I will equate that to your clients, right? You sometimes get clients in that are ready to gung-ho, and they're going to take on whatever you tell them, and they run with it, and they move at a really rapid pace. You have others who take their time. They incorporate one new thing at a time. They get rid of one thing at a time. Is it a slow pace? No, it's their pace. It's your personal pace. So never, you know, call yourself slow or behind or anything like that. Take your time, absorb this, utilize it, and make it work for you. So that's my answer to that. What would be the cause of glucose levels rising high after walking or exercising? Well, oftentimes that happens when somebody is in an adrenal burnout situation and they overexercise, or they're pushing too hard and the body's perceiving it as a stress. When the body perceives it as a stress, we go and we do a process called gluconeogenesis, which causes the body to go and break down protein sources and turn them into glucose. And that's generally what happens when you're exercising too high. The other reason for that could be that the person has, let me think about this a second. Let me see how I'm going to word this. Yeah, if somebody is on a fast or a cleanse or some kind of really severe ketogenic diet and they don't have enough glucose in their blood to be able to support their exercise, then that will happen as well. And somebody asked about a ketogenic diet. Luz. Okay, what do you think about food combining, like not mixing carbs with proteins or carbs with fat? Somebody saying eating fruit with fat causes candida. What do you think? Well, I don't think you should ever eat fruit with fat, not just for candida, but because that's the worst combination. And we talk about that I think it's module 3 or 4 of IRSPT. There are some studies that show that when you eat fruit and fat together, it causes the insulin to go up, even though the glucose doesn't, and the fruit just doesn't get absorbed properly. The fruits tend to ferment, and the fats cause the fruits to stay in the stomach longer. It could cause gas, it could cause bloating, and any number of things. I think about food combining as, for some people, super important. For people who have compromised digestion or working hard at it, food combining can be a godsend. For some people, it doesn't. They don't need to. Carbs and protein don't tend to be so problematic, but carbs and fat do. But really, they've done studies with actually baked potato and steak versus baked potato alone or steak alone, you know, with vegetables. And the insulin responses were worse when you combine the carbs with protein or the carbs with fat. So I'm really careful about that. It's not food combining per se, like for the reasons that are given, like on your digestion, but it's for your blood sugar balance. So I think that you definitely can eat like high fiber carbs with protein, like vegetables, lots of greens and things like that. But I think that mixing like grains with proteins, like intense proteins, because everything has protein, would be problematic, could be problematic for some folks. So it's just a matter of finding out for people. You watch and observe how does their digestion do afterwards and how does their blood sugar do afterwards. Hi. C. And we have a question from Lowell, Massachusetts. It says Reardon ENK. Who's that? Hi.
Hi, this is Eric. How you doing, Dr. Rita?
Hi. Good, Eric. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you. I have a question regarding blood sugar peaking and in terms of what's normal, and this is actually on myself. I seem to drop at the 45-minute mark pretty consistently, and I'm just wondering, is that normal, or should I not be dropping at that?
So when you say dropping, where's your peak then, if you're dropping at that time?
My peak is at 30 minutes typically.
Okay. Yeah, everybody's different, and it's usually between a half an hour and an hour. Average is 45 minutes, but at a half an hour, you're peaking, and then you're coming down at 45. That's totally normal. What are you peaking at? Like, what's your high point?
95, 96, around there. Yeah. If anything, I have hypoglycemia. I'm definitely not an insulin resistance case. I think.
Do
I'm
you go super low?
No, but one time I went 69, but I mean, other than that, I'm staying high 70s, 80,
great.
85. Yeah.
Yeah, sounds like you're in.
I don't know, because I seem to not do that well if I go long periods without food. Like, I never go 5 hours, or it's rare I even go 4. I just feel better if I eat.
Mm. So Are you very thin?
I am more thin, yeah.
Yeah.
I
yeah.
mean,
so
go ahead. I am on the thin side. It would be average thin, yeah.
Well, I would say that people who tend to be thin, you know, they tend to need to eat more frequently, number one, because they tend to have a higher metabolic rate and tend to not be able to eat as much at a meal. People with insulin resistance and full-blown and people who have a lot of extra weight on them find it much easier to go. Some people find it harder to go a long time between meals when they have some level of adrenal fatigue. So you have to find the right level. And when you're working with patients and clients, you want to find what's right for them. You can't just say, okay, you got to go 6 hours. And suddenly they're like have palpitations and they're falling on the floor. You can't do that. And if ever you do have someone who says, you know, if I go more than 3.5 hours, I start to get sweaty and my heart races and all that, that's an adrenal response. And that you have to avoid. As you help them to heal, that will get better. I've seen that over and over again. But you've got to work within the parameters. And that, I find that's usually the case with the kind of thinner or more wiry type people.
So as you heal adrenal fatigue, they'll be able to lengthen the time and get longer without eating. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Absolutely.
Okay. What about waking at night, which is like 3:30, 4 in the morning? And for some people, that's low blood sugar, isn't it? I know it can be a cortisol issue, but...
Yeah, there's a number of reasons at that time. You know, for some people it is low blood sugar, and sometimes what I do is I have people actually keep their meter right by their bed, and when they wake up, I take their blood sugar and see if that's the case. Oftentimes it's cortisol, and what we do for that is we do a saliva adrenal stress test to see what's happening. Some people just have their whole circadian rhythm shifted by a few hours. And so the cortisol is supposed to start coming up, very gradually at 4, but, you know, really high up to 8. You know, and I'm just saying these as averages. It might vary based on somebody's schedule, but it starts to come up. And it usually doesn't get high enough to rouse somebody until it's almost at its peak. But some people have that shifted backwards. I just saw somebody wrote their numbers in, and they were up to, like, I think their cortisol was up to, like, 10.7 at 3 in the morning or 4 in the morning. That's a shifted peak, right? So that's mm-hmm. the thing where you may have that. Sometimes it happens with women. I know for me, when my kids were little and you're up all night and, you know, feeding babies and changing babies, and then there's two of them,
yeah,
and then you're like, you can't
still
sleep.
It's still
happening to you?
To me.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm waking up at 4.
Now, have you had kids recently? Are your kids?
That's when it started. That's when the problem started.
That's when it started.
She's six now.
Habituated your body into that mode. And you know what I find, and this may seem really extreme, but this sometimes helps. I've seen this help lots of people, is you just decide you're not going to bed one night. So you basically just stay up all night, and then you don't do it with caffeine. You just stay up all night somehow. I've done it multiple times. And then you go to bed early the next night. You go to bed at 9. And in the evening, or 8 even, and that will help you. You'll be so tired, you'll sleep 12 hours, and get up at a normal hour, and then that usually puts it back after you do that. Maybe you have to do that 2 or 3 times, not in a row, of course, but, you know,
yeah,
like a couple of weeks apart over the course of a couple of months to reset it. Other ways to reset it, though, are with herbs and stuff, and starting to measure. I would measure your cortisol, because my bet and my guess, if it's after, you know, years and years
high.
Of being up,
well,
it was high in the night,
yeah,
in the middle of the night. Yeah,
I did it at 4 in the morning, and it was high.
And it was high, yeah, so it's off.
Yeah.
So there's an herb called phosphatidyl, or it's not an herb, it's a phospholipid, phosphatidylserine.
Yeah.
And
I'm
magnolia. And then other things you could do at bedtime, you know, to calm yourself down. So take that at bedtime and then take it again at the 4, or when you wake up to put you back to sleep. Don't be afraid to take high doses. And if it doesn't work orally, cream works really well. They found that for some people, they need up to 800 milligrams a day to get it reset. And it's quite pricey to do 800 milligrams a day, because that stuff's not cheap.
Phosphatidylserine you're talking about?
Yeah. So they have there's a cream from Apex Energetics called Adrenacom. Have you been?
I'm familiar.
Yeah.
I have in the past. Yeah.
So that.
I mean, I haven't been like this the whole time. I've gone through stretches where, like, I was okay for a period, and then it seemed to get worse. It's a fair amount of stress as well. So it's not. You know, it's been forever for 6 years, but I'm in that pattern right now, though, and it's a hard pattern to break, too. And I see that in my clients as well. I mean, I see many people that are waking early or that have sleep difficulties, and it's not an easy thing to reset.
No, because it's hard and it affects everything. I was in that mode when I had my kids.
Yeah.
You know, by the time neither one of them slept through the night until they were 3. And so they're 4 years apart. So for 7 years, I had, the 1 year in between, I just, you know, it wasn't happening, because I was off. And then the 3, and then when after the second one got to be 3 and started sleeping through the night, it took probably a year for me, or maybe longer, to reset it.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a favorite phosphatidylserine product that you like?
I've used them from neuroscience. Has that
calm CP.
Yeah, and then there's the Serifos from the name of the company.
Interplexus,
yeah. And then there's another one that's called Cortisol Manager. And I've used the Apex quite a number of times, the cream. I've used that a lot for people. And sometimes what you need is to give because then they need to come up, because it's off, right? So it starts coming down. So what happens is if it hits its peak at 4, then it's going to start coming down. And then at 8, when you're ready to really get up and going, you're exhausted. So sometimes what I'll do with people is I'll have them do the phosphatidyl at bedtime, and then when they get up, and then somewhere around, you know, 8 in the morning, then I'll have them do, like, something with licorice if they can tolerate it with their blood sugar, or ginseng or something, rhodiola, not rhodiola, is it rhodiola? Yeah, rhodiola. Rhodiola in higher amounts is, lower amounts is stimulating, and rhodiola in higher amounts is depressing. So I'll sometimes have them do that and just work on that, or Adrenocom and Adrenastim from Apex, and you just work it, and I've seen it balance out. And then you have to also look at, are there other things that are causing them to be stressed and wake up? Do they have parasites? Is common, because parasites lay eggs during the night, and that can sometimes wake people up. So you ask about itchy anus and gut stuff and all that, and make sure their diet, you know, make sure they're doing all the diet stuff. And if it's you, make sure you are doing the diet stuff and you're not doing coffee late at night or eating too close to that time and all that. So, yeah. What time do you go to bed?
All right. Around 10.
Okay.
Around 10. It's just a tough pattern. I've been there for a while. So
what happens if you go to bed later?
I don't wish you to find anybody. I might sleep a little bit later, but not that much, though. I'll still wake up early.
Still wake up there, so it's your pattern.
Still wake up early.
Yeah, it's your pattern. Yeah, you got to break it, and I would just be playing with those herbs at the right time and play with the different types. And magnolia is another one that works. That's in Cortisol Manager. And looking at
you you take it before bed, and you would take it again if you wake up, you're saying.
Yes. And if someone's having trouble falling asleep, then I'll have them take it at dinner time to help them go to sleep at bedtime. Dinner time, bedtime, and then when they wake up. But if you're just falling asleep easily at 10, then you don't need to take it then. But taking it at bedtime would be helpful. Bedtime, and then any time you wake up.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
I gotcha. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, you're welcome. Okay. Any other questions? Raise your hand. I see lots of you on, but I don't see any hands going up. I'm going to go back to the Q&A and see if there's any questions being typed in. Mary, I have a lady that takes diabetes meds. How will she know when she can decrease or eliminate these? Yeah, by her blood sugar, it goes down. So you got to watch these guys carefully when they come in on the meds, right? I've seen people go way down, and then they have to either, you know, they talk to their doctor about cutting the dose. I always tell people who are on diabetes meds to make sure that they tell their doctor when they start a program that they are indeed doing that, and that they want to make sure that they're aware that if I, you know, let you know that my blood sugar is starting to drop, that I need help with lowering it. So I have just have them continue to take their blood sugar, But if they're starting to see that they're getting really low periods, like sometime in the day or first thing in the morning, even they're waking up with their blood sugar at, you know, 50 or 60, then it's time. Or even if it's 60 or 70, they probably can maintain it at 80 or 90 without the medication. So I would just monitor it and have them go and see their doctor about cutting the dose in half. Yeah, and you see it all the time. I've seen people who started our blood sugar balancing program with their blood sugars in the 200s on medication. And then by the time they made it through their metabolic resets, they were off medication and were maintaining in the low 100s or even lower. So, and one of our people who's diabetic, been diabetic for years, and we've been working, she's in our energy recharge inner circle, and she texted me or wrote to me yesterday. She said, I got my fasting, my blood sugar right before I went to bed tonight was 85. She said she was thrilled. You know, it's just so exciting for them to see numbers that go into the double digits. Yeah, great question. Okay. So, Lynn, you mentioned that someone had submitted some questions or some labs that were not directly related to insulin resistance, and I don't know, remember where you said you put those, but I'd be happy to take a quick look if nobody else has questions about, you know, the blood sugar stuff.
Yes, that is Grace, and she is on the line.
Oh, great. Hi, Grace. Okay, we'll open her line. Where are they?
They're in the Dropbox.
Okay. So let me see if I can find it.
And the drop box is Iris BT Cases and Labs.
Okay, good. I knew we talked about that, but I forgot.
Okay.
Okay. Iris BT, I don't see that folder in the drop box. Oh, there it is, right at the top. Oh, I see. Okay. Got it. Okay, so, yeah. Okay, so, let me see. So, do you have particular questions, Grace?
I do.
Great.
Yeah, I do. The short of it is that she went to see a practitioner in California, which I've listed in the introduction. And all of her things that she was doing there, the vitamins, the brain protocol, and nothing, it, you know, it probably helped her nutritionally, but she didn't get better. She still has tremendous fatigue, sometimes not sleeping at night very well, and of course that just makes things worse, and she can't even fulfill her duties as a wife because she doesn't have enough energy to do those kinds of things for her husband, like cook and clean and do all that.
Mm-hmm.
So you have any thoughts about where to go from here? I mean, you know, the organic acid test is attached in that file.
Yes.
And
so what have you done for her so far? Have you worked with her on her blood sugar, on her digestion? And I see her adrenals are stressed out too, but have you worked the IRSPT type protocols?
Well, I haven't. And probably I'm not knowing where to go with this because when she said, well, none of these things are helping me, like all the vitamins and the Bs and you can see the list there. And, but yet she's going to continue taking them until all the bottles are gone. And I don't know.
Well,
that
it can't hurt if they're any good. I don't see the list. So Linda can give that to me, but, yeah. So, you know, whenever you have somebody presenting and they come from somewhere else and they claim they've done everything, you got to start by, you always start at the same place. Okay, great. What have you been taking? What are the doses? All this stuff. And then you go, okay, what are you eating? Okay, what's your stress level like? How are you sleeping? So you really have to go through and ask all those things because, is she eating gluten? Is she eating any other food allergens that might be problematic? Is she chewing her food? Is she digesting her food? Does she have an overgrowth in her gut? Is her blood sugar out of control? Do we know what that is? Do you have labs on her that show her hemoglobin A1C or her fasting glucose? Does she have any inflammatory markers? So it's really a matter for anybody that comes in if you've got to start with a complete, thorough history. That's the very first thing. And then you list, okay, these are the things she's got stress in these areas. These are the things she's done. And that's how it helps you to be able to evaluate, do you think you can help somebody if they've been to other practitioners and they've got all these symptoms and they've been doing stuff, then you look and say, oh, look, but they didn't do this. Oh, but they didn't do that, So those are the kind of ways I would do it, just do a really thorough history with her and find out exactly what she's eating, exactly the timing of what she's eating. I mean, I've had people come to me like that and we find out that their blood sugar is peaking at 175.
Mm-hmm.
And their fasting is perfectly normal, but their peak is 175 and they're feeling, tired and they're feeling low. So there's so many things like that. When I look at her adrenal test, it looks like she's in what I would classify as a stage two adrenal fatigue. Her numbers are, no, actually it's stage three. It's definitely stage three. I'm looking at that. Because when I look at her DHEA is super low. Their range is 2 to 10. My range that I want to see people in is 6 minimum, but really 7 to 9. So, and hers is 0.42. So super low DHEA. Her cortisol sum is still okay because her first morning is in the range, but it's at the very low end. Then she drops dramatically. So I would be supporting her with, I don't know if she's taking, you said she's taking a whole bunch of stuff, but I'd be looking at adrenal adaptogens. I'd be looking at talking to her with that level of DHEA if she's open to taking some pregnenolone or DHEA along mm-hmm. with some of the adaptogens to support her. The B vitamins are important, but vitamin B5, 500 milligrams three times a day, is what we normally recommend for adrenal fatigue. And usually what mm-hmm. people are getting of B5 is like 50 milligrams in their B complex, mm-hmm. right? So a lot of stuff, vitamin C, right? Adrenals eat up the vitamin C. So you've got to be supplying that vitamin C back, usually minimum of 3,000 a day, 1,000 three times a day. And then looking at adrenal adaptogens.
I think she's doing 5,000.
5,000. Okay, so that in that end, she's good. But I'd be looking at all the things she's taking and are they going to support this, but really looking at that blood sugar. You know, before mm-hmm. I jump in with the adrenals, I'm always looking at their digestion and their blood sugar. Those two mm-hmm. are critical.
I remember one time in somewhere, one of the talks, you said, if nothing else works, I'd be looking at parasites.
Sure. I mean, well, but I'm always looking at digestion first. Right? Mm-hmm. I'm not first looking at parasites, but I'm looking at how's the digestion. And I start at the top. You've seen some of my presentations.
Mm-hmm.
I start
mm-hmm.
at the top, right? What's the stress level like? Is she sitting at her desk scarfing down food, right? Is she chewing it thoroughly? So you go through and you balance the digestion. But, yeah, parasites are always a possibility. I would look for parasites. You look for a lot of different symptoms, but it could just be vague exhaustion. It could be
mm-hmm.
that
mm-hmm.
combined with digestive issues, itchy anus and skin mm-hmm. breakouts and things like that can contribute. But parasites can cause widespread problems. But, you know, given that we're in this insulin resistance program, I would certainly start with looking at her digestion and her insulin resistance issues.
Okay.
And I have so many people who've been just to everybody in the world, but nobody's really had them measure and found that what's their insulin curve. And that's
mm-hmm.
hugely stressful on the body.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard if you go jump in and do an adrenal protocol, but they still have all this insulin stuff going on and their sugars are spiking. That's a huge stress on the body, and it just keeps stressing the adrenals and causing them to need to secrete more cortisol and draining them at this point.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And DHEA is really low. Oftentimes that's a sign of poor sugar balance, because when the DHEA
mm-hmm.
is balanced and at a good level, it really supports healthy blood sugar
mm-hmm.
and receptivity of the cells.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, I will suggest she get a glucometer and also monitor that. She is a very slow eater, very methodical.
Oh, that's good.
She eats a lot of raw, but she does eat a little bit of gluten and a little bit of dairy.
Okay, a little bit, it doesn't help, right?
Especially
if she has the genetics for that and she has symptoms. So I've seen people get, you know, their energy changes overnight by just eliminating even the small amount of gluten and dairy that they do eat.
Now, her organic acid test showed
mm-hmm.
Clostridium.
Mm-hmm.
And so she's been on a whole bunch of antimicrobial natural things from the other practitioner, whose name I won't mention.
Okay.
And so she still has this. I don't think she's a high sugar eater. That's not, in my observations of her, I haven't really seen her. She's not a indulger.
Right, but it doesn't matter if they're a high sugar eater or not. I was not a high sugar eater, but I had insulin resistance because I love to eat pineapple.
Oh, that's
and
right.
And mango. Right? So
yeah. They
don't have to be eating sugar. They could be a starch eater. Obviously, if she's eating some gluten, she's eating starch. They could be people, macrobiotic people tend to have, if they have the genetics towards not keeping their blood sugars balanced, right? There's certain genetic profiles there. Macrobiotic is one of the worst diets for sugar balance
mm-hmm.
in somebody who's susceptible, because it's just a lot of grain, a lot of rice. So
mm-hmm.
I would be doing all the things we taught you here to look at what exactly is she eating. Get her to do a diet diary so you know. I mean, she's
mm-hmm.
her Krebs cycle is really hosed here.
Mm-hmm.
She's got a need for things like, CoQ10 and carnitine. And I don't know. Sometimes what people do is they run these tests and they treat the test rather
yeah.
than the person. and not mm-hmm. looking in detail, fine-tooth comb, about how are they working. Does she have a lot of stress? Does she have a stressful life?
No, she doesn't.
Okay, that's
good. She doesn't have anything. Well, she does do a little job here and there, you know, house cleaning, but she doesn't, they don't have children, and she isn't even living with her husband right now because the circumstances are such that it's better if she just is by herself so she can kind of recoup and not have the stress of feeling like she has to take care of him and so forth.
Yeah.
So, anyway, it's a very interesting case, and one of those kind of cases that you teach about, like when the practitioner, he's the high end kind of guy. He's you know, he told her that, you know, sometimes knowing that she didn't get better, it takes a different approach now. So, you know, I'm just watching, and I'm really interested to see if she'll be able to pull out of this with some of the things that we do.
Yeah, and I think if you focus, you just focus. So here, I'm gonna give you guys a preview of my complex case solving blueprint, which I'm gonna be doing some videos about in the next coming months. But it's basically, you gotta start with the foundations, and you gotta see if there's holes in the foundations that are holding her up. And sometimes it's subtle. Sometimes it's, you know, and those are all the stress and, you know, those pillars I talk about all the time, the stress, the attitude, the sleep, the nutrition, the environment. Sometimes it's an environmental thing and just not having anything pleasurable. Maybe she doesn't have the energy to go out and dance, but she can certainly have the energy to lay on the couch and look at pretty pictures, right? Mm-hmm. So creating something pleasurable in her life every day. And that's a big one, because most people who have been ill for a while, they don't take the time for that. They think that's a luxury. And you can say, look, just lay on the bike, listen to great music, watch funny movies, read, you know, comic books, or look at pretty pictures of beautiful places and dream of places you're going to go to. So really helping her with those pillars and the digestion. She clearly has tons of digestive things here and looking at her organic acids, lots and lots of digestive stuff. She's also got some neurotransmitter imbalances and some Krebs cycle imbalances. Mm-hmm. And if the approach is strictly to give her some supplements for all of this, it's not going to work.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Did the practitioner put her on anything for her adrenals?
I thought she mentioned Mirinda in there, but that's the only herb that I remember seeing. Let me look at her folder here. That's the only herb that I remember seeing. And so...
Yeah, there's a lot of work you can do to support the adrenals, but you've got to figure out why are those adrenals so stressed out. If she doesn't have a stressful life and hasn't over the last X years, then there's a stress somewhere else. It's a physiologic stress. So gut inflammation and gut infection is big, and it can be a big stress on the system. Blood sugar swings. So, you know, explain to her how the blood sugars can be up and down. Is she overweight at all?
She isn't. She's slender.
Okay.
But she would describe herself as, let's see, she wrote that since she was on the program, her bowel habits have improved. She'd describe herself as out of shape, loss of muscle tone, carrying a definite tire band below the navel, a fat deposit that is significant and indicates hormone imbalance to her.
Yeah, well, it does, right? Insulin, cortisol are my two top picks for that.
Yeah.
A slender person. Yeah, so, you know, hit that. Look at her, see what's going on with that. Her practitioner is addressing her gut, but you make sure that that's a comprehensive program that she's addressing. You look at what she's eating. You look at the foods that support gut health and the foods that hinder it. You have a free handout that I gave when, you probably remember it, back in August. And I can actually give you guys the link if anybody wants it, but it's a booklet I put together, Foods That Heal. It's a checklist, see, and you give people that, and they go, oh, I didn't know that, you know, and you really get let me see, I had it here. I have too many windows open, so I, okay, give me a second. I had it open earlier, and I'm sure I didn't close it yet. Oh, here. Nope, that's not the one. It's here somewhere. Oh. I have so many windows open that I can't tell what's. Here it is. GutHealingChecklist.com. GutHealingChecklist.com. And it's a really pretty infographic that shows, you know, some of the herbs that hurt the gut and herbs that heal the gut and foods that hurt the gut and foods that heal the gut.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah.
So she is taking pregnenolone 15 drops 3 times a day and DHEA 5 drops 3 times a day.
Okay. But as a result of this test, or is this test after that she started that?
This test was, I believe, last in 2015. So there probably hasn't been another repeat.
Yeah. So here's my take, right? When you put somebody on a protocol, whether it's adrenal protocol or you respond to an organic acid test or an amino acid test, whatever, you need to go back and check to see if you're on the right track. So you can't just say, here, take this stuff. And I don't know how long you'll be on it. Or just take it for 3 months and you'll be cured. No, if somebody has a test result like that and they put her on some of those things, B5, look to make sure she's on B5 at 500 milligrams 3 times a day for that. But then you go back and you retest it to see if it's going in the right direction, the wrong direction, or not doing anything at all, and then you readjust your protocol. So whatever her practitioner had said to her, you always want to readjust their protocol. And we're working with people, not textbook cases. So I'm going to teach you all this stuff and all these ways to do it, and sometimes people are going to show up and they're not going to be there. And the reason I teach so much of the underlying biochemistry and physiology and anatomy is so that you can learn to think on your feet.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Mm-hmm. And so that if it doesn't go the way you think it's supposed to go, right, okay, what really could be going on? And think through that.
Mm-hmm.
Make sense?
Yeah, it sure does. Thank you so much, Dr. Lee.
You're so welcome, Grace. Bye. All right. That was Grace. Super. Who else has questions? Who's working with people? Raise your hand and let's talk if you're working with people on any of this yet. Parents? Kids? Yourself? Who's working on themselves? The way you learn this stuff is to put it into action. The way you put it into action is just find a good subject, and work with them on it. And it could be you as the starting point. I highly recommend it's you and that you get yourself a glucose meter. Okay, I'm going to get to you in a second, Grace. I saw you put your hand up again. Who here has gotten themselves a glucose meter? Okay. Trina? Dika? Eric? Joan? Good. So the rest of you who haven't, get a glucose meter and start testing yourself. Observe it. I have stacks and stacks of papers. When I started testing myself, I printed out that glucose chart that I gave you. I printed out like 20 copies of it, stapled them together, and I carried it with me all over. And every time I'd eat, I'd do the, you know, 15, 30, the whole bit. And I have tons of research, and I knew exactly, oh, look at that. When I eat a mango, like a half a mango with a big bunch of lettuce, my blood sugar doesn't go up. If I eat a whole mango with just a little bit of lettuce, my blood sugar goes up. Isn't that interesting? So it taught me so much about what's going on for me. It also gave me the feeling of what it's like to do that. And if for me, yeah, it hurt a little bit, but it was so worth it. And that's what I told people, and that's what people said back to me too. Wow, it does sting a little bit, and it takes a few days to get used to, but it's so worth it. So I'm going to put the hands down, and I'm going to open up Grace.
Hi, I have, this is like a personal question in dealing with somebody like this gal. So the person she went to is known, and mm-hmm. and he couldn't help her. And so you talked about this before, and it's like when you said starting with the basics. It's a little intimidating, I have to admit, to be in this position when here he is, doctor, PhD, you know, way more knowledge than I have. And so do you have any comments about that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, been there, done that. So I know that. And you feel like, oh, my God, how could I possibly help this person? She's been to all these people. I had somebody come in to see me. And she had been to, like, four doctors when I looked at her things. And I'm like, these were famous doctors that if I said their names, you'd know who they were. And I looked at them like, oh, how am I going to help her? These guys couldn't help her. And I started looking at her numbers. And she had a situation where her TSH was up and down and up and down and up and down. And I said, did anybody test your antibodies? And she said, no, nobody ever mentioned it. She said, I just thought it was curious that my TSH was sometimes 8 and my TSH was sometimes 2 and it was 5 and it was all over the map. I said, that's a sign of Hashimoto's, Hashimoto's thyroiditis. It's an autoimmune disease. Has anybody ever mentioned that or tested you for it? No. Well, that's something I teach. Anybody that's been through any of my programs would know you start to see fluctuating TSH, you better test antibodies. Anybody that's worked with me knows any situation where somebody has low energy and you're suspecting a thyroid thing, you always test their antibodies, right? So none of these people did it. I tested her, and sure enough, she had antibodies. And she'd been told, well, you know, you're not celiac, so you don't have to be gluten-free, but just, you know, eat less of it. Well, gluten is one of the primary things that triggers autoimmune, especially Hashimoto's thyroiditis. So I was feeling intimidated because of the names. But they've missed the basics.
Yeah.
They've missed the basics, right? So that's right. What I want you to keep in mind. Don't underestimate the power of the basics, right? Make mm-hmm. sure her blood sugar is good. Test her hemoglobin A1C. Do you know how many doctors don't test hemoglobin A1C? So they miss that. Test her postprandial glucose. How many doctors miss that? Tons, right? And when you get these things balanced and you figure it out, it's not a deficiency of a specific herb or nutrient. And, you know, maybe there are cases which are going to be really tough and defy it. I've had those cases. And then I look at the genetics to see, well, is this a genetic thing? Is she have some toxic exposures and she doesn't tolerate it because her liver phase 1 and phase 2 are not working properly?
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, and if you're going to edit our videos for that thing we just did, you're going to have a blast with it because you'll learn all about that. So we just did 6 hours of going through those genetics. So there's so many things. It's like always, okay, don't leave any stone unturned. You always have to look at what other people have done and say, okay, what did they miss? And if they haven't missed anything, you're always going to think about the psychology of it. A psychology is one big thing, and toxic exposures. It could be mold in her home environment. It could be dental amalgams that are stressing her body out and won't allow her to get. So all these little things that don't have a direct correlation necessarily to her symptoms, but they have been overlooked because certain folks, and I know some famous doctors, and I'm kind of curious about who it is because I think I know who it is, that have this way that they deal with everybody the same way. And if it doesn't work, then they have to dig in other ways. I'm not of that bent. I treat each person as an individual. And yes, we have certain, you know, nutrients and ways that we deal with people, but we adjust it to the person. So do a complete history, do a thorough blood sugar evaluation, look at some of those numbers. Look to see if she's had blood numbers done before, if she's got elevated inflammatory markers like CRP, C-reactive protein. She has high homocysteine or high MCV indicating a B12 deficiency, which could indicate some sort of autoimmune issue in the stomach. So there's a bunch of different things that you could test for and check, even with just a normal routine blood thing. And we go through all of that in NEPT. We have a whole module, which you probably edited, on that stuff, on how to really look at the conventional blood sugar test and pick out a lot of these amazing nutritional imbalances that you can help people with.
You know what this really is for me? It's moving from traditional medicine as a nurse.
Yep.
You know, you come in and you treat the symptoms. And it's like I have to, my brain is shifting.
Yes, that's great.
To look at it a whole new way, because it doesn't, that way just doesn't work. And
right.
So that's what this is for me.
That's great.
It's making new neural pathways in my brain.
Uh-huh. Just like Eric had to make new neural pathways about, it's not time to be up playing with baby, it's time to go to sleep. And yeah, there's neural pathways. And that's a good thing you bring up, because I find that the this for that mentality is very common. We've grown up with it in Western medicine. Any of you have been a nurse or a doctor or anybody in Western medicine, you know that the this for that, that's how you teach it. You work with somebody, you categorize them, and you put them in a box. You know, somebody goes into the insulin resistance box, or somebody else goes into the Crohn's disease box. And once you've got them in a box, then there's just any number of protocols that you work on. That's not the way functional medicine is supposed to work. That's not the way we look at things. We're looking to restore balance. So we're looking at why. The big question is why. Why is this happening? Right? Why does she have this symptom? Why are these bacteria overgrowing? It's not enough to just kill the bacteria. We have to look at, why are these bacteria allowed to overgrow? Is it something she's eating that feeds them? Is it some sort of stress? Was it some sort of exposure? Did she go hiking and, you know, drink the water? But you want to always be asking the why, not just to get down to a medium level, but to get to the deepest level, you just have to keep asking why. And then you have to look at, how do I balance her? So when you ask the question, how do I bring someone into balance? Sometimes all kinds of stuff happens. That's one of the examples is Beatrice, who is in this, has been in this program, but she originally was in our blood sugar balancing Before Be Gone program. And she came in with one thing in mind, that she had pre-diabetic blood sugar and she wanted to get it under control. And she worked the program. But in working the program, she healed her gut because she was on the anti-inflammatory foods. She was off of gluten, right? Because somebody said, Britt said, well, how could I do that? Well, this person healed her leaky gut by just going through the blood sugar balance, and she did all the pieces. She did the stress. She did the sleep. She did all that stuff. And the amazing thing was, 4 months later, when she got back to the doctor to be retested, her Hashimoto's was gone, and she had had it for 50 years on thyroid medication. But as a result of putting this program into action with all her heart, because she knew she was going to do it to the best she could, because she wanted to get better and she did not want to get diabetes like her mom and her uncles and her aunts. And she healed all these other things, and she ended up losing 110 pounds. So go figure, right? She was able to bring balance to her body because she balance this one area. She didn't focus on symptoms. She focused on balance. So that's the way we look at it as practitioners. It's a really refreshing way to look at it, too.
It's awesome.
Yeah. Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for bringing that up, because I like to get on my soapbox about that. Bye. Okay, I'm looking at Judy's comment. She said, when I was on a living food diet, I could tolerate eating fruit just fine and have plenty of energy. But since I've been eating cooked foods, I get sleepy after eating just a handful of blueberries. My sugars are stable. Blood sugar peaked at 90 after blueberries. The max it's been was 125 after drinking a large glass of carrot juice, but I felt great. Not eating junk food, sugar, etc. Could this feeling of being tired after blueberries or some fruit be something other than blood sugar? Yeah, it actually could be, like Glenn says, in your digestive, it could be that you're feeding, you know, some yeast overgrowth in your gut. it could be, and you got to make sure that you, if you're peaking, that you are doing the 6 hour, you're not necessarily six, but you go past the 3 hours to see if the sugar is dipping down, because it may be that you're not peaking high, but you're going too low and you're overproducing insulin, which gets you sleepy. But it could be digestive, it could be adrenals. And what cooked food are you eating? You know, if you're just eating steamed vegetables, it's different than if you're eating, you know, breads and pastas and grains and things like that. So, yes. All right. I'm going to look to see if anybody types in any other questions here. Darcy said, working on myself, I've gotten a meter. Yes, good for you. Luce says, what do you recommend for a thin person that doesn't want to lose more weight? They need to eat more and they need to do a little bit more on the fat side. There are certain contraindications to the fat, and they would need to eat a little bit more frequently. So you have to balance that out, because they would need to be putting on weight. And thin people generally have high metabolic rates and they can't go as long, or they can't eat as much. And so I would get them eating more in the way of, you know, things like avocados and coconut. And we had actually one person who was diabetic, and she added MCT and coconut oil to her diet, and it brought her blood sugars into balance finally. So, and is the ketogenic diet safe? Yeah, a ketogenic diet, I believe it can be very safe as long as you're focusing also on an alkaline forming ketogenic diet, because it's ketoacidosis that's dangerous. But if you're focusing on a lot of alkaline producing foods, you know, like your green leafy vegetables, the nuts and seeds that are on the alkalizing sides as opposed to on the acid side, all of those things, they can be very safe. But it's not a long-term diet, and it's not a diet for everyone. I think it's a therapeutic diet. We can do it, their ketogenic diet, to try to restore insulin resistance, although our diet is not really ketogenic. It can be made to be, but there's a lot of vegetables in it, which would bring up the carb content higher than a true ketogenic, which can be anywhere from like 10 to 50 grams of carb a day. When I do my diet and I just don't eat any fruit and I just eat vegetables and nuts and seeds and coconut and avocado and stuff, I will measure and add things up, and I do over 100 grams of carb from the vegetables. So it's very slow-releasing carb, very high-fiber carb. But for somebody who's thinner, you know, I would say making, you know, smoothies with an avocado in it, and making soups when she, you know, is eating vegetables, or salad dressings even, and putting some whole food fats in there, tahini and things like that. Okay, I think that's it there. Let me see if the chat's working. Oh, yeah, the chat's now working, so let's see. Carol says hi. What would be happening in someone's body if someone's thin, skips breakfast, and works out within an hour and a half? During the workout, they become super tired to the point that they had to go home and sleep because they had no energy. Yes, some people who are thinner don't do well with skipping a meal and then exercising. So that works really well for people who have more weight on them, or who are more athletic and more muscular. But she just didn't have any reserves. As she's thin, she didn't have any reserves. So she probably should have something in the morning, something low glycemic before she eats. You know, it could be a smoothie, a green drink, or something like that. That's what I would check. And she may be in adrenal fatigue, so you don't know how she exercised, like what kind of exercise did she do. Did she do a really intense workout and she has adrenal fatigue? Jessica, how do you heal parasite infection? It's a very long thing, and I would we go through a whole parasite and protocol and gut healing protocol in our digestive healing program, which we're going to be opening up back in September, I think. Maybe an adrenal response, that's what Lynn says. She agreed with me. Yeah, and if you have something, have her have something like that has some protein in it, like a green drink, like a green powder with some protein powder would be light enough so that she could exercise an hour and a half later easily, wouldn't be heavy on her system. So something like a green protein drink with green powder in it. I need to work on myself, but just got thrown a curveball with this gluten thing. Yes, I have a glucose meter. Carol, explain what you mean by a curveball with the gluten thing. Do you mean that having to give up gluten is hard for you, or did you get exposed, or what? Great, Mary. Let's see, Lynn. Joan, I'm using a meter and working with a friend. Yay, she now has a meter. I put the training aside in assessment session to work on a TRT. Okay, so you're working on your thyroid. Carol says, I have a friend who is going to a doctor to get thyroid tested and told her things to make sure she get tested for, and he yelled at her and told her he's been doing this for 35 years and she should go back to the internet and research it, and he walked out and left her in his office. Very insecure doctor, very close-minded doctor, and those are the kind of doctors that all they think is true is what they learned in medical school. They're not willing to actually read the research, and he actually doesn't understand the biochemistry, because if you or the physiology, if you look at it, the thyroid is way more than just a TSH. The least expensive place to get glucose strips, Carol, is the place where we put on the site, on the glucose testing page. I recently found that they had 300, a pack of 300. I just bought it for like $40. It's really great. Yep, Joan says the same thing on Amazon. Okay, so no more questions there. Let me shift back to the other place. And if you have a question, last chance for questions, and you do a star 2 on your telephone keypad. And Mary says, I have a lady that just was diagnosed with diabetes. She saw her doctor for the first time today, and I have my first appointment with her tomorrow. Any insight you can give me will all be appreciated. All the stuff that I said to Grace, do a thorough history. Find out what she's eating exactly. Find out her stress levels. Find out how she's sleeping. Find out how often she eats. Find out if she eats right before bed. Ask her all the questions in the assessments module. Do a thorough history with her and explain to her how diabetes is if it's a type 2 diabetes, there's so much you can do to reverse it, and it can happen really quickly. One of my clients had been struggling to actually do the work. You know, we've been talking about this for a long time. She knows what to do. She does it for a few days. She finally decided to go out to the Tree of Life, where Dr. Gabriel Cousins, has a program that he takes people who are diabetic or insulin resistance are heading that way, and he takes them through a 3-week program. So she went out there. She decided she was going to do it. She was going to be trapped there. She wasn't going to be able to go off and drink her sodas and any gluten and all. And she went there. And when she went there to start, her blood sugar had just crossed the 120. She was at 121 fasting. Her hemoglobin A1C was like 6.2. Her CRP was like 16. And there was a couple of others I had written down. So she went in there to get that tested. Oh, her fasting insulin was like 30. And she went in, and she just got retested. She went there she ended up staying for a 4th week to learn all about the food and the preparation. She was there for 4 weeks working on this whole thing, almost exactly the same program that I teach here, only it's resident. And she came back and her blood sugar is now 85 to 90. Her fasting insulin is down below 10. It's still not where I'd like to see it, but we're going to keep working on it. It's down to 8, but from 30. Her hemoglobin A1C is down to 5.7 in 3 weeks, because she had the test done at 3 weeks. 3 weeks, and that's phenomenal, because usually it takes a long time to get the hemoglobin A1C down. And her C-reactive protein went from whatever it was, 16 down to, I think, might have been like 6. Yes, 6. So everything's moving in the right direction. And this was just in 3 weeks, basically, because she had the testing done at 3 weeks. So this stuff happens quickly. And just allow that person to know that if they continue the path and they go the route that the doctor wants to do, which is medication, or they're not going to really talk the diet, and if she doesn't make those changes and she doesn't keep her blood sugar in the range of no higher than 110 as possible, or that's where she's targeting to, no more than 20 point increase at every meal, and you help her through this, that she can avoid the complications of that diabetes, the loss of sight, the peripheral neuropathies, the cardiac issues, and more. So good luck, Mary. You can do this. You got this. Carol says, all of a sudden my stomach is bothering me when I eat. I listen to the Hashimoto's Summit. Now I'm really concerned about my brain, as I've been saying for a while, there's a wire not connected. I have not started testing myself yet, but I do have a glucose meter. I'm noticing a lot of changes in me suddenly. Foods never used to bother me, and now my stomach aches almost all the time. I eat, and the other thing is I can pass out on the couch after a meal. That never used to happen. I eat this one salad, and I put dried cherries on it. I think it could be the cherries that knock me out, even a smoothie with a banana. Well, Carol, you have to start testing, because if you're finding that salad with dried cherries and a smoothie with a banana are causing a problem, those are high-sugar foods. So you need to start following the program, like actually do it for yourself, and I think you'll have some good results. I mean, clearly, if you listen to the Hashimoto's Summit, maybe you have Hashimoto's, have you been tested for it? So I would do a thorough test and do that and see what's going on. Yep. Just run through the program. This is the thing. We're not about chasing symptoms like we talked about with Grace. We're about restoring balance. So you don't look at, will this food or will this program help with this symptom? No. What do I have to do to restore balance in this person? And then the symptoms start to resolve by themselves. So I think that's it. I don't see any more hands up. We've been at it for an hour and 15 minutes. This has been a great call. A lot of stuff. And Judy says, I think I need to get back on raw living diet again. I love it, but my husband complains. I haven't had gluten since 2001, and only one grain I have occasionally is quinoa. Okay, so you're eating a pretty pretty clean diet, it sounds like. So, there's a lot of things that could be going on there, very much so. It could be a blood sugar thing. It could be a digestive thing. Look at it at the big picture. See what you can pick out. The other thing I could suggest to you guys is to find buddies. Like, reach out on Facebook, and maybe there's some folks in your area or just remotely, and work with people. Work with each other. Do a case history on each other. Just work with each other if you don't have clients that you're working with, and that could help you tremendously. So I'm going to open up the line so everybody could say goodbye to each other. Bye, everyone. Talk soon.
Bye. Bye. Thank you.
Bye. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Hi, thank you.
You're welcome.